This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I'm Katie Rich, and in a minute, you'll hear from my colleague Anthony Bresnahan, who is doing our interview this week with Owain Arthur, who plays Prince Durin IV on the new Amazon series Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. It is, yes, the second high-profile prequel to a major fantasy series premiering this month, the other one, of course, being the Game of Thrones prequel, House of the Dragon. But Anthony has been immersing himself in the world of Tolkien and Middle-earth, and with Joanna Robinson, the two of them did a big first-look feature on The Rings of Power for the magazine earlier this year. So Anthony is exactly the person you want to hear talking to Owain Arthur and really getting the rundown on The Rings of Power and everything that we'll learn about the world of Middle-earth on the show. So let's hear from Anthony and Owain Arthur about Rings of Power.
Hey everyone, this is Anthony Bresnahan. I'm a senior correspondent at Vanity Fair, and I'm joined today on Little Gold Men by Owain Arthur, who's one of the stars of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, which will have debuted on Amazon Prime on September 2nd. You may have caught the first two episodes, but there are many more to come. Owain, thanks for joining us today to talk about the show.
Thanks for having me.
You play Prince Durin, and I hate to say, I'm not sure you'll be recognized on the street for your performance because it's a pretty transformative one, isn't it?
Well, it really is. Not unless I don't shave, I think. If I grow a big beard, then people might recognize me. But yeah, I'm kind of looking forward for that piece, I suppose.
So describe for the people who are just listening to this, the look of Durin. You mentioned there's a big beard, but that doesn't quite do it justice. It's a big beard that's braided and full hair.
It really is. That beard comes in about 12, 16 pieces. I can't actually remember. But it's a big old beard, and it's kind of patched on at the bottom of the chin, down on the sideburns, down on the cheeks, the moustache, and there's nose cones as well. And you're right in saying it's very heavy. I was often carrying it like a baby on set. Kind of, I'd pick it up because it would dangle down by my feet. I'd pick it up and kind of hold it up and nurse it around just to kind of keep the weight off my neck, really. But it's quite a beard, it's quite a wig, and the nose is quite prominent as well, I think.
And it's a physical performance. You're smashing rocks, and he's a very physical, tough character, right? He's not a prince who sits around and luxuriates on a throne.
No, he's not. And I think that says a lot about the dwarves, really. I find them quite working class and, you know, down to earth. They've got their feet on the ground and they don't mince their words. They speak straight, you know, they say what's on their minds, and it's their mind is often filled with anger. So so that's a lot of fun to play.
In the first time we meet him, he is in conflict with an old friend, Elrond, who people will remember from the Lord of the Rings novels and the Peter Jackson movies, who was an important leader in the Elven community. Here he's still an important leader, but he's sort of a younger diplomat played by Robert Aramayo. And you two are old friends, but this is a friendship that's fractured. Can you talk to me about the relationship between these two?
Yeah, well, what's so interesting about Lord of the Rings, about the world that Tolkien has written, is that the elves are immortal and they live for many, many years, thousands of years. So when an elf doesn't pop over to see a dwarf, after 20 years, it kind of, that offends the dwarf. You know, that's a long time to not call. But but for an elf, it's just, you know, it's a weekend. So so there's kind of, there is a misunderstanding there. And inevitably, because of a dwarf's nature of mistrust, and particularly when Elrond is half elven. So there's slight animosity there, and what was interesting is that for Durin, he was hurt and his reaction is anger, but he was actually, his heart was broken that his friend hadn't called over, and I find that quite a nice soft side of a dwarf.
And very human and relatable. I can relate to that, to old friends that I haven't seen for a while, and where have you been, and now you're showing up when you need something.
Exactly. and it so happens that Khazad Dûm, the kingdom that I'm in, is thriving at the moment, and therefore, you know, dwarves get paranoid, like, okay, they want something. Because we're doing well, they want something. So there's that doubt in there as well. But you're right with the human thing. Even though we're dwarves, we're different beings. There is a human side to them, a very domestic side to them, particularly in our series. We see Durin married to Disa, who's played by the lovely Sophia Nombete. He has children and his father is the king, played by the wonderful Peter Mullen. So we get to see the pull of the domesticity in the dwarf's life, and also the responsibilities of a future king. It's not just going down the mine, knocking some rock, and having a pint. There's more to it than that. Although I think he'll be good at all of them.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. The jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/littlegoldmen today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/littlegoldmen.
Well, you anticipated one of my questions, which was about Sofia Nungvete, who plays Disa, your princess, your bride. That's the wedding that Elrond missed. So he's meeting her really for the he's meeting her for the first time, and she's sort of the connection, the bridge between them. She's very warm and welcoming of him. She's very undwarf-like, I would say, although she fits the height.
Well, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the first time that we will have seen a female dwarf featured in Tolkien's work. So, so there was, and there's not a lot written about them. And also she's different as well in the fact that she resonates. She can speak to the rock. So there's something special, extra special about Disa as well and her intuition. So when she sees that Elrond has finally popped over for a cup of tea, she's heard the fact that she's heard so much about him. And she's probably seen that how hurt I am that Elrond hasn't been called over. She knows it's best that we kiss and make up. So she's kind of, what her reaction is for my benefit. And that's what's great to kind of play in this relationship is her telling me what's best for me. She can see where I fail and she will correct me and vice versa as well. It's a strong relationship, that's for sure.
You mentioned the resonating, which I think is a really fascinating concept. She explains that she literally harmonizes with the rock. They live under the Misty Mountains. They live in Khazad-dûm, which we saw in Tolkien's novels as a kind of tomb, an abandoned place. And this is like New York City. This is thousands of years before, and it's thriving. It's full of people. It's full of activity and work, and there's commerce, and you could just see it. It's like walking down Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. But she resonates, and I found that to be really interesting, is that these are beings who really are working in harmony with nature. And I think the danger that they face, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that of falling out of harmony with that, of becoming, as Tolkien put it, digging too greedily and too deeply into these,
into
these mountains.
That's it. And nature is such a big part as well of Tolkien's work. And it's interesting. I think he was saw the Industrial Revolution in the UK, and I think he saw the damage it had on the countryside, on the cities, and it's interesting that element. Well, it's what I pick up on, particularly today in the state that our planet is in at the moment. That it really resonates. Excuse the pun. That that he's written about nature a lot and the caring of it and the holiness of it, the trees and hold the secret to this world.
Mm-hmm. And she, I feel like she knows where to drill with Durin too, doesn't she? She knows where the pressure points are, where to drill and where not to drill.
She's got the remote control on how and where to put Durin, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned
yeah.
she's looking out for him in this relationship. It isn't just that she wants a partnership with the elves. I felt like, and again, I'm reading into this a bit, but you tell me, I felt like she felt like Durin needs a friend. He needs a friend outside the mines. He needs to be somebody who thinks beyond the world that they inhabit.
It's true. Right? I think that's true about them. We definitely looking further afield than we would expect from dwarves. But Tolkien actually did say at this age that the relationship between elves and dwarves have never been better. So it is a golden age for
for the dwarves here. And in terms of Durin's friendship with Eldond, they've been through a lot together, I think. Rob and I had various discussions on what that particularly may be, and we touch on it in episode 4 or 5. So I'll leave that for you to for you to decipher what actually happened between them. But myself and Rob, we went on it on a little journey together to a place called Rotorua in New Zealand, and we did we stayed on the in a little cabin on the side of a mountain, and we woke up first thing in the morning to walk through the canopies of the forest, and we did a walk also in the middle of the night through a forest where to see glowworms, and we had a guide to take us through there, and it was so peaceful and quiet and exciting, and it felt really special to me and Rob. So being able to kind of experience that and have that and then bring it onto set was special, and you know, I consider Rob now to be one of my best friends, and therefore to have that as a reference to what Durin thinks is a betrayal is what was very handy to kind of tune into.
Well, what's the performance like with him, given that there have to be camera tricks to accentuate his height and minimize yours? Are you ever performing together? Is it a forced perspective thing sometimes? Are you sometimes performing your scene and he's performing separately in another scene so that they can be merged, those shots? How does it work? And what's unusual about it from a performance standpoint?
Well, all of those things. We basically tried all of those things. We tried every method. Mm-hmm. And the technical team that you know to do the scale work, they were fantastic and so accommodating into finding out what works best for us as performance, because their goal is to make the performance as good as it is and also to make it look as good as it can. And it was a partnership in that, really. And met the scenes between myself and Rob did require us to play off each other a lot. So and we weren't sticking to the same performance on every take, which was wonderful and magical and a blessing when you find an actor who is open and willing to be that open and to play off what you give him, and then you can play off what he gives him. It makes it so exciting. But then you add on to that, like this kind of sledgehammer of a technical
complication.
Complication. There we go. Thank you. Yeah, it's you know, it is a real obstacle. So we did the forced perspective version. I wasn't too keen on that one. We also over the shoulder.
Why is that a problem? Is it because you're just...
Well, let me tell you, we were supposed to be looking directly in front of each other. But for him to be larger, he was closer to the lens and I was further away, but we still had to look in the same direction, i.e. not at each other anymore because we were far apart.
Yeah.
And I had to look really high up on a... I think they actually did put a tennis ball on top of a stand for this one. And Rob had to look at a mark. I think it was a fluorescent tape on the floor. So we had to, I mean, having a different eye line is fine, but then we had the distraction of having each other being to the right. And therefore, you really, you know, you were being distracted and wanting to look at him. But I didn't find it, you know, we were just constantly thinking about the technicality of it.
So you have to, I was going to say, you have to resist that urge to have the human connection then, because you're elsewhere.
And therefore you're focusing on, all you're thinking about is not looking at the actor and not what you're trying to do to the actor, you know, and you can't see if you're having any effect on him. So that was a difficult one and my least favorite.
What was your favorite one? You were about to say what your favorite was. Was it a favorite scene or a favorite technique?
Well, whilst we're on the technique, my favorite one was when he was up on an apple box and I was stood right underneath him, and it was that simple. You know, that was simple. Mm-hmm. That was by far the easiest one to do, because he was right there in front of me. He was right there where he was supposed to be, and they were filming us, and that was it. It was done. There were times where we almost played Twister together, to be honest with you. There were other times when I was sat on a stool that had wheels on, and we were doing it from Rob's perspective, and he had to follow a different eyeline because he had to play on a different set, and there was a bit of green screen on there, so it was really difficult for him to kind of imagine what room he was in. And I'd try and be as supportive as I can for my fellow actor, and kind of so that he can have the same opportunity as me to bounce, so that we could bounce off each other. But also it was quite comical that I was dancing around and kind of wheeling myself on this stool to catch his eye, so I can kind of still be in the same scene with him. It might have made us corpse a couple of times, but we got through it. It was good.
And with Sophia, you don't have that same complication, right? You get to just sort of perform together. Is that about right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So if we're all at the same height, then we're fine. We can. Mm-hmm. We don't have to play around with any of that. Apart from if we go to Lindon, where the elves live. So mm-hmm. I had a dinner scene there, and you know, they haven't got miniature forks and plates for a dwarf for when he comes. So it was quite fun, actually. I felt like a child sat at a table that was too high, with giant forks and knives and big cups to slurp from. So yeah, that mm-hmm. took me back to being a child again.
Hey, I'm Brian Stelter, host of Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. This week, with the help of Dan Adler and Olivia Nuzzi, we're going inside the media circus swirling around Donald Trump's criminal trial.
People want coverage of Donald Trump. There are sort of shades of 2015, 2016. I found it to be a total break from the reaction to a lot of Trump coverage in the last 2 years.
Join me, Brian Stelter, on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Well, we talked about the hair and the prosthetics you wear on your face as Durin, but tell me about the costume itself and the other. You get a hammer. You have all sorts of equipment around you.
I know.
And things you get to play
I
with.
Do.
Tell me about the costume. What does the costume say about him?
Well, funnily enough, this Kate Hawley designed this costume, and she is, I think, she's a Tolkien professor. I mean, she isn't, technically speaking, but I think she is. Kate even researched into what inspired Tolkien and the dwarves, and went back to Thor to kind of get her inspiration from there. And so building the costume for Durin, he needed to be regal. He needed to be one of the guys, you know. And whilst we were trying to sort out the physicality of dwarves, and specifically Durin, we kind of came prominent that he needed to be grounded. You know, they're made of rock. There needs to be a weight and a groundedness to him. And therefore, I kind of said, I asked her if we can do a heavy boot, a big heavy boot. It would help my physicality. On set. This is something that came out of a workshop that we did, and by wearing a big heavy steel toe capped boot, it gave it a different movement, like another being, and she did, and she came up with these delicious golden boots. And after the first day of shooting, I instantly regretted it, because they are genuinely heavy. but there we go. Suffer for your art is what they say.
Your face is carrying the big beard. Your legs are toting around these giant boots.
Exactly.
It's a heavy performance, I guess.
It's a yes, exactly. It is. It does carry a lot of weight, literally.
He's. I wouldn't say he's the most cheerful person. He's very expressive. He's very grumpy. I think that's fair to say. And and very, very loud. He doesn't hold back. And at least even when he tries, when he's trying not to explain or not to reveal how angry he is at Elrond for having missed so much of his life, he'd still, I could just see you sort of like a soda bottle that's been shaken too much, ready to blow. Tell me about playing that emotion. He's a strong cup of coffee, Doran, isn't he?
Do you know what, Matt? you're bang on the money there with the soda bottle. That's exactly what it is. His anger, his frustration, his heart, all of his emotions are bubbling right here. And I really focused on that, actually, that kind of he's just about managing to keep a lid on. It's like when you see one of those old teapots on a gas stove kind of bubbling, and when it just starts to boil and the lid just kind of taps up and down like that, that's where Durin's at with his emotions. So that was something that I was tapping into, and it kind of created a big ball of fire in his stomach. And to be honest with you, I absolutely loved it. I absolutely loved being able to have that kind of complication in him, and that the fact that he wants to hold it back, but he can't.
Well, the last thing I want to ask you before we let you go is about your performance with his father, Durin. It's Durin the Third, right? He's the third, and you are Durin the Fourth. So a string of Durins here. Peter, you mentioned Peter Mullen plays that part, and he's a much older dwarf. You can see the frailty in him, and he dresses differently. You mentioned how your Durin, you know, he's regal, but he could also fit in among the workers. And this Durin is much more in a sort of a cloak, and he's clearly tired. And I gather that your Durin is really a leader in waiting. He's really leading this community now and ready to take over from his father. What's the relationship there between the two of them?
I mean, he loves his father dearly. Durin's mother is not around anymore, and therefore there's just me and him, and the fact that they are both Durin. Kind of says there's an expectancy there for myself to perform and to do what's right for our kingdom, for the dwarves. And, you know, he's another generation, and life moves on. I think it's true in our days today. You know, people, the older, you very rarely get the older generation who wants big change. They're quite traditional and they want everything to be as they are. And this is a classic case of that, where the younger son sees potential for the kingdom, whether he's right or not. That remains to be that question. So that there's a battle of minds and future prospects for the kingdom coming up. But again, I was blessed to have Peter Mullen play that part because he's just a phenomenal actor, and there's so much wisdom and anger behind those eyes that it wasn't difficult to be scared of him.
Well, we see at the end of the I think it's the end of the second episode a box that glows, and I think if you know your Tolkien, you might be able to guess what's in that box, but it's maybe not ready to reveal just yet to those who don't know. But clearly there's restraint, and then there's, as you said, with Durin, your Durin the Fourth, a desire to go further, and I gather that's what the tension will be going forward, is how far should you go if you should go further. And
yes, exactly. That's exactly it. What's held in that box will
will be important, and does have an effect on, well, certainly on both Durins, the third and the fourth.
Mm-hmm. Owain Arthur, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to seeing more of you in The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, as much as you as we can see, that you radiate through that beard. So even though it's a burden for you, you're coming through loud and clear.
Thank you.
That does it for today's show. We'll be back on Thursday with our roundtable conversation about all the festival news that's been happening over the past week. In the meantime, you can find us at vanityfair.com, including a lot of Anthony's coverage of the Rings of Power. You can sign up to text with us at joinsubtext.com/littlegoldmen or text us at 213-401-9739. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HWD. Our editor and producer, as always, is Brett Fuchs.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.